Poetry Rocks, Tool 19, The Arrangement. And the purpose of the arrangement is to understand the how and why of arranging words, lines, and stanzas in poems, and to just practice arranging these elements. And for some background, I'm going to talk a little bit about arranging words, about arranging lines, and about arranging stanzas. And my favorite word arranger has always been the poet and playwright Edward Estlin Cummings, known to the world as E.E. Cummings. And he was just a master at arranging words on the page in artistic ways that created puns and double entendres and much more. And Richard Nordquist's Ask.com page, What is Metaphor?, shares a Cummings poem that intertwines the words leaf and loneliness in a vertical falling pattern on the page that visually and metaphorically compares loneliness with a falling leaf. It's just stunning, I think. And do check it out. I have a link there for you. And E.E. Cummings was just someone who inspired me so much back in those days that when I first came across him when I was in high school, and for years I didn't use any capital letters and very little punctuation. And one of the poems I'm going to share with you is one I wrote a very long time ago called Funhouse, where I played with the arrangement of words and the letters inside words just like E.E. Cummings did. So you'll see that. Now, arranging lines. I'm going to say a little bit about this now, and then our next tool is going to be all about line arrangement, because as I pointed out as I was sharing an earlier tool with you, when I shared my poem about breaking the jar, that I talked about enjambment, we're going to go into that in more detail. But I really do want you to know now, as you work with this particular tool, that the choice of where to break your lines is a great opportunity for artistry. And I mentioned enjambed lines. There's another kind of line that's called an end-stop line. And as you learned, the enjambed line is where you keep your idea flowing through lines and you break right in the middle of these phrases or sentences to create extra meanings or extra emphasis. And an end stop line is the opposite of that. It's a line that breaks at the end of a thought or phrase. And it's a place where we would naturally take a breath if we were speaking. And I'm going to let two masters demonstrate the difference. And the first one is Shakespeare, who I'm sure you're all familiar with. And the other is a master teacher named John Drury, who has a great book called Creating Poetry that I highly recommend. And this is a quote from his book. I've got a couple paragraphs here for you. He says, "The line, of course, is the poet's basic unit of composition, but there are several ways of laying out sentences on that gridwork, modeled by lines from Shakespeare's Tempest. And the first way is that the sentence equals a line. Be not disturbed with my infirmity. One sentence, one line, and that's definitely an end-stop line. The second way is when your sentence equals part of a line. What would my potent master? Here I am." And that's also an end-stop line, because we end at the end of a sentence, even though there's two sentences in the same line. And the third way is when the sentence is more than one line, and this is where you have enjambment. "We are such stuff," line break, "as dreams are made on, and our little life," line break, "is rounded with a sleep." And then Drury goes on to say that Shakespeare uses end-stopping, halting at the end of a line, usually aided by a period or another punctuation mark, and enjambment, letting one line spill over into the next. The line break gives a slight pause, but a line that's enjambed will still push over strongly into the next. It's as if the end of a line swelled up like a wave, letting the words surf right along, flowing into the next line. Good enjambment has an exhilarating feel. It's breathless. It's an onrush. Good end-stopping takes a breath, pausing contentedly. And when you're writing free verse, here are some line considerations for you. What line length best serves your subject matter, meaning, and tone? Long lines, medium lines, short lines, or do you want a combination? Will you use end-stopped or enjambed lines, or are you going to use some combination of these? And what about indented lines? This is a really visually pleasing arrangement, and you can look at Southern Spring in Tool 9 as an example of that. That's one that I really enjoy using. And now let's talk about arranging stanzas. The composition of your stanzas is going to make an immediate impression on your readers so that they'll know at a glance, or at least have some idea of the degree of formality of your poem, whether or not they should expect meter and rhyme, and more. Any poetic form will dictate the way you arrange your stanzas, so you're automatically going to have a more formal poem if you're writing in a form. Those words go together, right? And keep in mind that a stanza break, just like a line break, adds pause and emphasis, and even more pronounced pause and emphasis than just a line break. So you keep that in mind. And also, sometimes it serves a poem not to be divided into separate stanzas at all. And a stanza, of course, is simply a group of lines separated with a space, and we all know that. But let's talk a little bit about what can unite the lines that stanzas contain. A stanza often ties together the sense and meaning of the lines it contains, so it can act like a paragraph does in prose. And it follows that one way to choose breaks is to group the ideas in your lines together the way you would in paragraphs of prose. Another thing that can unite the lines of a stanza is a regular pattern of rhyme. So anytime you have the same number of stanzas per line, as I said earlier, you're adding a degree of formality, and you're suggesting to the reader that, this may be a rhyming poem. So if you're not writing a rhyming poem, but you want the more formal look of a certain number of stanzas per line, then I'll give you a tip. It's usually best to avoid rhyming in the first couple lines, because if you do that, then you're going to set up this unfulfilled expectation, and you can end up disappointing your readers or having them think, what's going on here? You're kind of giving them a bait and switch in a way. So that's something to think about. And I'm going to just tell you, if you haven't ever learned these terms, that if stanzas in a poem each have the same number of lines, then they're named by the number of lines they contain, and each of these has its own feel, look, and weight on the page. And for each of these, I give an example. I won't read these out for you, but for almost all of them, I think I have an example that in a different tool you can go back and look at, so you can check that out if you like to. But you have couplets, which are two-line stanzas, tercets, or they're sometimes called triplets, that are three-line stanzas, quatrains are four-line stanzas, cinquains, five-line stanzas, sextets, six-line stanzas, septets, seven-line stanzas, and octaves, eight-line stanzas. And that doesn't mean that you can't have longer stanzas, but those are the traditional ones. And when you're writing, here's some stanza considerations for you. How many stanzas will you divide your poem into? Where will pauses and emphases best serve your poem? Where will you divide your stanzas? Will each stanza have the same number of lines or not? Will any of the lines in the stanzas be indented? So now that you have all those considerations, what you're going to do is just to choose a poem that you've already written. And I think this is a really great thing to do with your tool rather than starting from scratch, although you can do that if you'd like to. But hopefully by now you have some poems that would be fun to play with. So pick one and rearrange its words, lines, and or stanzas. And if you haven't ever played with this before, you might want to take a look at word, line, and stanza arrangements in at least a few poems by your favorite poets and give a little bit of thought to why they made the choices that they did. And I really invite you to try several different arrangements. One of the things I love to do is to take my whole poem and put it in to, say, tercets or septets, and then see what happens to the meaning of the poem and the shape of the poem, and then put it back. So do just experiment and try a couple different arrangements with these elements. And you might actually want to go back to Tool 4, the poem Luckless, because I actually have a couple different arrangements as I took that through. And so just go ahead, and I have a little more in here about words and lines and stanzas that is just kind of a repetition of what I mentioned in the background information, so you can take a look at that. And I have two examples for you. The first one is the one I mentioned that I wrote in a Cummings-esque style, and it's called Funhouse. And at the time I wrote this, I was 16, and I had a really great time playing with the letter I as I considered the way my own identity and the identity of my friends and classmates seemed to be in a constant state of flux and often felt beyond our control. And I did a lot of scattering of these images across the page. So I actually remember how much I enjoyed playing with this, just how much fun it was for me to do this. And as I read this poem, it'll be really hard for you to be able to really see it, because this is a poem, when you get into this visual kind of component of playing with words, if you don't see it on the page, you can't really tell how it's going to be, but I'll read it just so you can have a sense of this. Funhouse. A strobe light scatters confused images on the walls, mocking my disorientation with flashing confirmations of my existence. Everywhere I look, I see myself reflected, but every mirror shows a different distortion, and I don't know which illusion to believe. So that's a poem that exemplifies arranging words. And then I have another poem to read you where I really played quite a bit with arranging lines and stanzas. And this was inspired by a poem I came across at a conference I attended at Duke University on poetry and medicine. And it was just a little while after I lost my mother. And one of the presenters shared a poem by Robert Cording that contained the words, "When we parted, all that was really left." And that just hit a nerve in me. And my thought went straight to the final parting with my mother. And I actually started with kind of a list. And all that was really left ended up turning into a kind of dwindling refrain, which is a part of each stanza. So it just gets one word shorter all the way down. And I played around quite a bit with how I wanted these stanzas to break. And I definitely wanted a sort of a jagged feel to this, since this was a jagged experience for me. And here comes the poem. And again, it's after lines from Robert Cording's poem, Elegy for John. It's got a very long title that I didn't put on here. When we parted, all that was really left. All that was really left. The tremor of your hands. All that was really real. The oxygen tank, the nurse who brushed your hair, that broken-handled pink plastic hairbrush, nylon bristles half gone. Why did you never buy yourself a new hairbrush? Why did I never notice, right there on your vanity, each year of my childhood dwindling? All that was to say how grateful I am for that last night, sleeping there on two pushed-together chairs next to your bed, hearing your labored breath, that you held on until all five of your children arrived. All that, and how I told you Perry Como would sing for you in heaven, my last words. Now that you're gone, all that is really left is everything I remember. And here's a reflection for you. Describe the considerations and or process or processes you used in the past to arrange your words, lines, and stanzas. How did you used to do that before you learned some of the things you learned in this tool? And has the work you've done here added any new considerations or processes to your repertoire? If so, jot them down. And to hone your craft in this area, pay careful attention to the word arrangements, line breaks, and stanza breaks in every poem you enjoy. Ask yourself why the poet chose these particular arrangements. And as you write your own poems, choose your word arrangements and your line and stanza breaks really deliberately.